Hi, this is Paul Siegel, and you're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan, and today on Wandering DMs, we have Luke Gykax, who's an Annie Award-winning designer. He's founder of GaryCon in honor of his father, Gary, who created Dungeons & Dragons. And today we'll chat with Luke about his mega-adventure Wrath of the Sea Lich, now on Kickstarter, and the 50th anniversary of D&D. All that and more today on Wandering DMs.
Do I fix it or do I just go on?
Hey, we're back, everyone. Before we get going with Luke, I just want to remind everyone, as always, that at the end of the show, we will be hosting our after-party chat. That is a live video chat hosted by Dan and I for all our patrons. And you can join in by becoming a patron. Visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. Join at any tier, and you'll get an invite to our Discord server. Get onto our Discord server, and around 10 after 2 Eastern time, we will host that live after chat. And we hope to see you there.
We love that every week. And of course, big thanks to our patrons, including Backrius, for checking in that we are currently live on Twitch and YouTube and Restream and a whole bunch of stuff. So, Luke, thank you so much for making time here on a Sunday to join us and talk about Wrath of the Sea Lich and other projects you've got going on.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be back, guys. I enjoy being on your show, so thanks for the invite.
So you were telling us that this is of course, this is the 50th anniversary of your father creating Dungeons & Dragons along with Dave Arneson. And yeah. you were telling us that this is a sufficiently busy year that you're kind of hoping that things settle down a little bit.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I enjoy gaming. I enjoy going to conventions, but it does take a bit out of you, time-wise. There's the prep for the convention. There's the actual convention. There's the coming back and recovery. It kind of impedes upon the ability to do other work and, of course, take care of normal family life and that sort of thing. So, gosh, I think I've been to 7 conventions already this year, and I'm going to Gamehole and Luca this month. So I got 2 more. Wow. I think I'm done. I don't have any in December, so that'll be good.
Wow. Fantastic.
How can you say no to going to Luca? So Luca Comics and Games is an Italian convention. I heard nothing but good things about it from, Stefan Picorni goes every year, my friend Alex Kammer and Joe Manganiello. Everybody highly recommends it. It takes place in a medieval city in Luca, a medieval walled city.
Wow.
About 30,000 people, 35,000 people comfortably fit in there, right? Like 100,000 people show up for Luca. So it shuts the entire place down, and it's just intense and everything all around, and it's supposed to be just amazing. And tabletop is part of it, but it's a larger celebration of fandom. The reason, I would go anyway, but the reason I had to go this year is they're dedicating a gate through the walled city to my dad and Dave, and they're putting up a brass plaque on the city wall. And you can't. Yeah, that's a once in a lifetime thing on the 50th anniversary. What a wonderful legacy. And so I really wanted to be there for that. And I'm bringing my family, my 3 daughters, and my wife with me for that, so because none of us have been to Italy, so had to go to that one. And then Gamehole Con, my friend Alex Kammer, I wasn't going to go this year, and then I said I can't not go, so I called him a couple months ago and I said, all right, can you make space for me? And he said yes, so that was great.
Amazing. You're super generous with your time, and we appreciate when you make time for us and everybody else that you share your insights and your energy with is always fantastic. Let's talk before we talk about all these other fantastic 50th anniversary stuff that's happening, let's dig into Wrath of the Sea Lich, which is currently on Kickstarter, and viewers, you can look at the description on YouTube right now and go back. The Wrath of the Sea Lich Kickstarter, which is already funded, and we're just trying to get to higher tier bonus levels at this point. So, what an interesting project! When I first read this, Luke, this is a reconstruction and compilation of a series that you've published previously called Oculus of Senraba, I believe, and it's published by your company, Gax Works. and it takes place in your world of Ocarim that you've been writing adventures for. So tell us if we didn't know anything else about the adventure at all, tell us what this adventure is about.
Yeah, awesome. So the adventure itself is a Shadow Dark adventure. So I got to know Kelsey Dion. I love her style, and from just looking at the rules of Shadow Dark and playing it just even just one time, I got it. It totally made sense. This is the essence of old school dungeon delving, but it's using faster, slimmer, sleeker rule sets that kind of is really a time saver and lowers barriers to entry. And it has some neat little new twists on it, like the idea of a torch take is, you know, 1 hour of real game, you know, real time. Your torch will burn out in an hour. And you can only carry so many things, right? So torch, like basically there's some resource management aspects in there into your dungeon delve that help. And the tension is high and the stakes are high, but it's fun and fast. So I love that. And when I initially envisioned my world of Ocarim, 5e didn't exist yet. So the earliest adventures I wrote were more grimdark, AD&D style. So this fit very well. So I had these 5th edition adventures that I love, this Oculus of Senra's Bastards. It takes place in the city of Shintufi and below it. And I thought, wow, let's take this. This should be fun. This, we can rapidly get this out to the audience of Shadow Dark players, and I think they will love it, and it will introduce them to this world, which a grimdark version of it is kind of where I had initially, you know, my initial thoughts of it. 5e has a different feel to it. Of course, you have to write to the rules to a certain extent, right? There's a lot more, you know, negotiations and other skill sets and things that are desired from the 5e audience. So you shape your adventure that way. So I enlisted. Kelsey was quite busy. I would have twisted her arm a little bit, but she referred me to a really talented writer, Sursa Victory, who was well schooled in Shadow Dark. And with his advice, we went through and reimagined and reshaped this to fit Shadow Dark. So you are a group of adventurers, and we start you off in this adventure. You start off in the midst of action, just like, you know, some movies. You start, boom, there's you're right away thrown into the action. You're being chased by a megapede and some ghouls, and you have to get out of out in the blighted lands, searching through an old temple you were hired to. So you deal with that, you go up, and you get, you're introduced to the story hook, which is there's someone looking for an ancient magical item of a long lost Idrisid empire, and, you know, here's some clues to it, and you begin your delve. And of course, it is, I don't want to spoil, I don't want to give too much away, but this condenses three modules, which, you know, are pretty standard size modules. There's three of them that are, what, 60 pages each or something like that. So this is a big adventure, right? Probably 100, 150 pages or something like that in the A5 format.
Wow.
But you delve beneath the city of Shintufi, and that's the beginning of your adventure that's going to carry you into the Everdark and out into the waters, and eventually you get to the heart of it, which is confronting an ancient Idrisid mage turned lich, the Rishkigal, who has been in stasis, essentially waiting for this moment to bring her dreams to fruition. I don't want to give too much away, but you have to peel this onion back in the story to get to that point. But essentially, you are facing, there's the destruction of, you know, millions of people if you fail in this mission to recover the Oculus of Senra'ba. So it's a high stakes adventure for, let's see, for Shadow Dark, I think the lowest I would start it with, depending on the number of players, if you had 5 or 6 players, you could probably be 3rd level. A little fewer than that, I'd probably start at 4th level. I would imagine you would level up 1 to potentially 2 times by the end of the adventure. Is kind of my gauging from reading the rules and using my judgment on it. So it's for Shadow Dark. That's a major accomplishment. So this is a big campaign, and we are including enough information on the world of Ocarim that will allow a GM to tailor that, make that their world setting if they would like, or you can certainly plug it into your own setting easily enough.
Nice.
We fund it in like 30 minutes, and we're just going towards the goals. I think we got two new classes. I'm designing two new classes that are Okram, my world of Okram specific. Up next, I think there's 5 one-page starter adventures. So if you wanted to, you know, introduce maybe those players are second or third level, and you want to do some adventuring around the world of Okram and Citation 2 first before hitting them with this larger campaign. We can angle towards that. Up a little bit further, we have Dice and Logos lined up to do some cartography for us, which would be great. And if we can push it a little further, my friend Mike Merles has offered to do some work as well. I'd really like to get his help in maybe crafting, looking over my shoulder on some of these classes and stuff. He's got a little experience, this Merles guy. He's been around for a minute, so I think you've probably heard of him before.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the great things about running, Gary Kahn and just being, you know, having my father's legacy that which has helped me make all these connections. And honestly, I would say 98% of people in the gaming community are really down to earth, great folks who, if you just ask them for some help or advice, they're willing to give it to you. You know, certainly Kelsey, who I've mentioned, one of those people, what a great and talented person, so humble. I tell her, don't be so humble. You're really great. You should. And then Mike Merles is just the most laid back guy who's so talented and so willing to help others out that it's really nice to be part of this community, I guess, is what I'm getting.
That's fantastic. That's great to hear. You know, so we currently have, so we Paul and I think mutually have to confess that Shadow Dark was not on our radar, frankly, until you pointed it to us as part of the Kickstarter. So for our viewers, Shadow Dark, which we currently have on screen at the moment, kind of old school Renaissance-y type summoning first edition kind of vibes, written by Kelsey Dion, published last year, and she won all the awards this year. So she won all the Ennies this year with this Shadow Dark.
Four gold Ennies.
Best game, best rules, best product, and best layout and design all this 2024 year. So it was a good thing for you to inform us about, frankly, Luke. And it's really interesting that people are doing these really interesting iterations on old school gaming, and Kelsey is, let's say, a bit younger than we yes. are, frankly. And it's yes, really yes. interesting that she could come to this right with some interesting energy and really get inspired by old school gaming and putting her twist on it.
Yeah, I mean, my advertisement for Kelsey is she put in years of work to develop this. She developed this at Gary Kahn over probably 3-4 years. She learned to play D&D or honed her skills with James Mishler as her DM, who was a guy who gamed with my dad, right? So old school kind of energy about him. But just using their own words, I'll just pull a couple sentences out of Shadow Dark. Shadow Dark RPG is a fantasy adventure game where you and your companions delve into buried ruins, lost cities, spider-infested forests, and even fearsome dragon lairs in search of golden glory. And then speed, danger, and simplicity. What defines the game? Speed, danger, and simplicity. Magic is perilous, and battles are fast and deadly. Being clever is crucial for survival. And it's rules light and intuitive. It encourages quick decisions rather than hunting through rule books for answers. And it's true. Most things are like a couple paragraphs at most. Maybe a page for something complex. And you run. So it is, barrier to entry is low. You know, D20 type of system for much of it. It's easy. It's cool. There's lots of tables in there if you like tables and fun stuff like that. So I would say give it a shot. Take a look at it. I think she even has a free starter rule set that you can just download and read through. So give it a shot, people. That's she hasn't paid me to advertise for it, but it's a great one.
It sounds very impressive. And the motivation of rules light, fast paced is exactly the things that we here have, you know, emphasized and try to acclaim and push forward all the time ourselves. So it feels very warm to my heart exactly where the motivation for Kelsey's Shadow Dark is coming from. That's fantastic. I'll also say this, you know, you mentioned the rule about a torch lasts 1 hour real time, real clock play time. And it reminds me that I myself have transitioned, like a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about wandering encounters. And I myself have transitioned to the random encounters in my games are based on real clock time. So I roll a random encounter every 15 minutes. I think kind of the same motivation that Kelsey has is if the players want to, I don't know, worst case scenario, look at their phones or they have like a random argument or debate or play acting, that's fine. That's enjoyable. We like that. But you're gonna be enticing, you know, more danger coming at you as a result. And I myself hadn't heard of anybody running a mechanic based on real clock time other than myself, frankly. So that's a really interesting piece of zeitgeist floating through there.
Yeah, absolutely. And my dad wanted to stimulate action in the game and not inaction and kind of what he would call dithering around. So if you were spinning your wheels, the wandering monster die would start rolling. You might not say anything, but you kind of had an idea of what was happening. And sooner or later, if you didn't pick it up and start moving, then the action would find you if you weren't going to go find the action. I also think it's important that it's not just combat. It's cleverness, how to approach things. And of course, there's traps, puzzles, and other things like that in the game, too. I think those are all important bits of it. But there's less, you know, negotiating and strong-arming investigating and role, like ROLL playing when you're talking to an NPC or something like that. Essentially, in Shadow Dark, there's not rules for that. It's if you go and you seek out some bit of information, say, well, I'm going to try to find this thing out, and it's in there. Okay, yes, you spend some time. You may have to spend some resources or whatever it is to get the information, but then the DM delivers the information to you, and you continue on to your next, you know, delve, whether that's up a tower, down underneath the ground, or whatever it may be. It's a lot about being in shadowy darkness and what is right outside of your sphere of illumination. There was a great Vin Diesel movie, right? Where wasn't there like The Dark or something like that? I can't remember.
Yes.
Very early Vin Diesel. That was kind of fun. So darkness, that whole idea of darkness.
Whatever viewers
is
really can remind us. Yeah. What do we call, do you know?
I don't know it off the top of my head. Luke, let me ask you a question, though, about Wrath of the Sea Lich here, as it pertains to running it in Shadow Dark. I mean, certainly, like, as Dan mentioned, neither of us really has any experience with Shadow Dark. We've only just recently become aware of it. Sounds amazing. Definitely curious to look at it. Taking pre-existing 5e content and having mapped it now to Shadow Dark for more old-school feel, I'm curious how much of it is now tied into the Shadow Dark system. Or would you say, is the content easily adaptable to other classic or old school Renaissance or retro clones that are popular these days?
I think you can easily transfer it into even a, you know, an OSE or even a Castles and Crusades, although that has some, the Siege Engine mechanic has some of those 5e elements in it as well. So, but yeah, certainly I think Dungeon Crawl Classics and things like that, I think, are in the kind of a similar vein. I think you can fit them in there. Certainly easier than you can fit just the 5e document in put it into old school.
Sure. Yeah, I know myself and a lot of other indie publishers that have made content for D&D in the past couple of years. Oftentimes we're releasing right like two kind of side-by-side products of here's the 5e version and here's the old school version, which often is or something, right? Whether it's Swords and Wizardry or just classic D&D or whatever. Yeah, and I find that a lot of those older, old school inspired games, it's very easy to jump from one to the other. So I was just kind of curious how that fit in. That's great. I know that will definitely appeal to our viewers here.
Oh yeah, we can put it in. It's in Shadow Dark. But honestly, converting it to Swords and Wizardry is pretty easy. I've talked to Matt Finch. He actually converted the 5e versions into Swords and Wizardry. and sold a bunch for me on one of his Kickstarters. So thank you, Matt and Susie, for doing that. Another more great people in the community. But yeah, absolutely. This is fun. Shadow Dark feels, honest for me, easier to write in because it's like, A, it's simple and streamlined, but two, it kind of was my roots in the hobby. So this really feels old school in the best ways, right? And even though I like some of the wonkiness and cumbersome, wrestling some of the AD&D stuff, it's a lot easier. It's smoother. You know what I mean? It is quicker. So, you don't have to pull out the book and read the rule set. And honestly, I never did that anyway. I would just make a decision and go with it and then figure it out later if I screwed something up. Because honestly, there's times where I'm running a game and someone's like, it doesn't quite work that way. And I'm like, what? And they're like, yeah, here. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I was wrong. But I always ran it this way, or my dad ran it this way, so I've run it this way. Sorry. And we just roll with it. But I think it also encompasses the, it's about, it's your game, make it your own. These rules are guidelines. It embraces that whole idea. And what better way for, in my mind, to really get the flavor of a setting out than through, a rules light, fun, fast system. I really like that. We are converting some, Okrum specific spells, magic items, we'll have some add-ons for, gods and the subclasses or orders and things like that, that'll help people, get a better idea of the world of Okrum, which is building towards my major 2025 release will be a setting book for the world of Okrum, which is long past due. We talked earlier before we went live. Running businesses and GaryCon stuff like that, it takes a lot of time and energy. And then getting into the creative process and trying to do everything on an island, yourself, is very difficult. And so just like any great project or any organization, you have to be able to bring in good people, show them your vision, what your intent is, what you would like, and then empower them to do their job and kind of watch over their shoulder from a distance, not too closely, right? You don't want to micromanage you, but let them do their thing and trust them. And oftentimes they're surprised, or I speak for myself, I've been surprised by some of the awesome and amazing work when I've given people my ideas, and then they're able to bring more to it. And I go, oh, wow, yeah, I hadn't thought about that possible aspect of it. And it's like, that is dope. Let's run with that. So
I don't remember what you asked. Let me ask you. You mentioned a future project of detailing out the setting for Okrum, and I'm curious. Now having published stuff for Okrum and different rule systems, are you going to target a specific rule system for that, or are you going to try and remain like system agnostic?
Yeah, man, yeah, you're asking me the hard questions because I'm wrestling with that too, and I think I'm going to have to probably do this split thing where it's. There's a 5e, kind of version, because 5e is a great system. It's brought tens of millions of people into the world of gaming, and you cannot ignore that. That's a huge audience that wants, that can get set. But I also think that there's, simpler, lighter, more old school rule sets that would fit well into, whether that's Shadow Dark and OSC and Swords and Wizardry or all of them, I think that makes sense. So I don't want to shut off one group, one audience or another. Although there are stylistic play differences, I think I can create in both. And the lore, right, can pretty much fit either one of those.
Sure.
Let me sharpen that question, actually. So for the products that you do make for 5th edition D&D nowadays, going forward, will you be targeting 2014 fifth edition, or will you be targeting 2024 fifth edition? Because at this point, I think we only have the player's handbook out. We don't even have all the core rules. So which flavor of fifth edition, Luke?
Currently, anything that's in development currently is 2014, just simply because of that. There's going to be a learning curve, right? And I'm sure there's some folks who are aggressively working towards that. I am not a person who loves digging into rule books and looking for the differences. So I'll wait for that kind of to be distilled down and read the executive summary for those. Honestly, I don't run Wizards of the Coast, and I'm not some great genius, a business genius or anything like that. I don't know. I'm confused by the 2014-2024 thing. I'm not sure why you wouldn't just say it's either an update, a 5.5 or whatever it is, or not. And I think they've created some confusion. So I'm still kind of waiting to see what the kind of results of that are. Are they really going to just embrace VTT style play? And I heard in this, I don't want to open up this can of worms either, but I heard something that Chris Cox, who's the CEO of Hasbro, was saying they really want to incorporate AI in like a large segment of their D&D products and stuff. I'm not AI is a tool. I get it. It can be useful in many applications. I don't want to, say, AI is evil. Or I don't think it replaces the role of the human element in your art and your play in this aspect. So is it a tool you can look up? What are 50 names for that sound similar to this or incorporate these elements or something? And it craps out some ideas and, oh, okay, sure. That's, name generator or whatever. Some of those things are fine. And then you go and create. Like you would look up a word in a thesaurus, essentially, right? It's just kind of, it's a tool along those lines. But if it replaces somebody and you're relying on AI to generate content, I think that's a bad idea. So I kind of want to see where they're going and how that plays out, even as just a very small player in this community.
Reasonable.
That seems
a lot of bad stuff. Let's move on to something better.
Great. Well, I'm going to call back here to the answer to the burning question earlier. As expected, our
yes.
Chat has provided the name of the movie is Pitch Black. That you're looking for. There you go. And I just want to
Pitch Black, man. Wow. So much tension.
I think it's
there was
a great idea
in that movie. It was a low budget movie. I think it was one of his very first movies. But man, was that good. I loved that movie. I thought he did a great job in it. And the idea, the tension around it was fantastic.
I love the idea that Shadowdark is embracing this notion that darkness is important, right? I think that's something that a lot of us have come to. In my own old school games, I definitely house rule. Dark vision. I call it dark vision. What is it really called? Infravision. That's the word I'm looking for.
Infravision.
Right? Yeah, I house rule it down to just to the point of like, well, it still needs a little light because if there's no light at all, it's dark and nobody can see anything. And I love that because I love that incorporation of the fear of the unknown and the darkness. It's very important. It's integral, I think, to the mood of dungeon exploration.
And what if I'm a creature that's not warm blooded, right?
Mm.
I'm just the temperature of the ambient surroundings, right? So am I really going to, are you going to see me with infravision? No, you wouldn't. So there's lots of things that could slip in there and would be dangerous. And of course, things that were hunting creatures with infravision, I'm sure there'd be some adaptations there and that sort of thing. But in Shadow Dark, no one has dark vision, infravision, except I think maybe monsters. So there's, if you're none of your ancestries, like they don't, again, it's a newer game, so they're using ancestries as the word. They don't have no one has dark vision, so you're on equal footing in that regard. And if that torch goes out, bad news. Lots of your wandering monster chances go way up. Your fighting capabilities go way down. It is bad juju. So you do not want that torch to go out. You got to think about it and probably have some torchlight management, right? Which I'm sure Anyway, there's going to be lots of different ways to work that angle. And of course, as a terrible GM, you're probably going to have things that could happen that would like, oh, hey, you go under a waterfall, or maybe there's a spell that has cold that's targeted towards a torch, or, all sorts of different effects that could maybe shorten that torch's lifespan. And then you're suddenly forced to get out your flint and steel while being attacked and try to light a torch, right? So all sorts of fun dynamics.
Dan, in his own original edition Delta rules that we use for original edition D&D, has kind of changed the way the darkness spell works to, rather than creating an area of darkness, which is just a weird thing for one to wrap one's brain around, to have it simply extinguish existing lights, which I think is very, it makes more sense to us, and it's more, and it's great for moments like that, right? Like the party's walking along with their torches, and then suddenly, boom, they all go out.
Like if you're fighting some drow or something like that, now they have an advantage over you because they can see you even though your lights are out.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I think the same thing. Yeah, monsters can see you can't see them. And isn't that, I mean, that's like taps into your fear, right? I don't know how many people have walked out into the woods, you know, like really where there's no light and you're just hearing the sound around you. And even the rustling of, like, I don't know, something that's the size of a squirrel sounds like, you know, a horse or a bull or something coming at you. And you're like, what the hell is that? So, yeah, that's...
You know, as a little aside, I was at a camp when I was, like a summer camp when I was a preteen. And we went on a night, sort of hide and seek, sort of. So it was there was a dark forest night walk, and then we played hide and seek. And so I got under the lower bushes of an evergreen tree, and people could be 1 foot away, and I was like 1 foot from the path, and I was crouching down here, and they could walk back and forth 1 or 2 feet away from me, and they had no awareness that I was there whatsoever. They had no idea someone was lurking literally 12 inches away. I could see their foot right here, and they were never going to find me there until we came out at the end. And I was like, that's powerful stuff.
Yeah, I was, no kidding, on a night patrol, you know, just in training, right? So thank God. And I was the lead guy in a squad just going out through some wooded terrain. I literally stepped on a guy. And that's the only way I found him. obviously, he's like, gotcha. And I was like,
I mean, this is a great encounter that's got to go on an encounter table somewhere now of you stumble upon a sleeping monster literally by stepping on them.
Perfect. You could, right? Step on a sleeping ogre. Yeah, so really, I mean, just being without the ability to see is so, you know, debilitating, really, especially if you're in danger, right? That's scary. So tapping into that, you know, that really, you know, age-old visceral fear of the dark, you know, is a great component to a game. So yeah, I love it. And you know, this, I'm very proud of the adventure that I wrote with Matt Everhart, my co-author on this one, really great guy. As well. And, you know, so being able to take that and get it into the hands of people who, you know, and it is a different adventure because you're underground. Shadow Dark does change it, but I think into a really an adventure I like, maybe even a little more in this grimdark, you know, delvey setting. So, yeah, if that's your thing, pick it up, or at least go to the Kickstarter website, read about it a little bit, and back it. We have tons of options and pledges from, you know, a PDF relatively cheap to the book. Like I said, that'll be hardbound this size, and I'm imagining 150 pages of material. So it's going to be quite a lot. And since I got my first convention for 2025 lined up, I'm going to go back to Genghis Khan in Colorado. I may add a pledge level where you get to play with me there as well at a game, since the ones at GaryCon sold out and my couple that I was doing virtually sold out. So that would be fun. So keep your eye on there. I'll maybe go update that hopefully today or tomorrow.
Great. And we'll remind our viewers, we have a link directly to the Kickstarter for Wrath of the Sea Lich on the YouTube description right there. So you can jump over there right now and back Luke's new adventure. Grab that tier that he was just talking about. You can play with Luke at that upcoming convention next year. So look, before we get short on time, I did want to ask, so here we are in the 50th anniversary. Some of us have been playing Dungeons & Dragons for close to 50 years. Yep. I'm not going to say all 50, but pretty close to all 50 years. And so, and I know you were reminding us that you ran a first edition adventure for Gen Con TV this summer with Peter Adkinson and some of your other good friends that we've had here on the show before. So has there been anything that this year that came up that surprised you or reflecting on the legacy of your father, Gary, creating this revolutionary game that has come to mind this year?
I, you know, this year, did something this year special occur to me? No. The power of Dungeons and Dragons became clear to me when my dad passed away and people reached out to me and they told me, this changed my life. I didn't know your dad directly. I didn't know him. I never met him. But his work through the creation of Dungeons and Dragons changed my life by helping me through this, helping me overcome this, whether it be a learning disability, a terrible home situation where I was able to not only escape, but learn that I could be a hero in my own life, that I had the ability to change outcomes, right? So it was empowering in that. I learned, I overcame my social anxiety. I met my best friends for 30 years, or 30 plus years. I met my spouse, etc. All those things of how it can change a person. The people who play RPGs are impacted in ways that other games don't. And I think it's through the nature of, a lot of it is through you have to learn about yourself because you're working as part of a team, and you learn to take you have a different viewpoint than you might in the real world because you're assuming another role. And so that can help you have some empathy and relate to other folks. You also learn that you can't do everything yourself, despite my insistence sometimes to myself that I should be doing it all myself. No, you're part of a team and everybody has different skill sets. So AD&D is really wonky, right? Boy, the wizard has, these skill sets, and when they level up, they get better, and the fighter can do this. You're not good at everything. Well, that's just like real life. You're not good at everything. And having other people with you makes you stronger and able to accomplish so much more, and you learn from one another, and you complement each other, and you need to rely on one another. And those are some of the amazing things about D&D that have come clear to me over the years. Now, on the 50th, one thing I did that I thought was freaking cool, and I didn't know how cool it was going to be, was I got this idea. Well, what can I do for the 50th anniversary that hasn't been done that would really be neat and showcase D&D? And I said, well, what if you just played one single scenario that took you through all editions of D&D? I thought that would be neat, and it would show you how the rules change the style of play, right? And how it's evolved, the evolution of D&D, over the 50 years, right? And so I reached out to a couple friends and said, can you help me with this? And they did. So I got Zeb Cook, Keith Baker, Kelsey Dion, and Mike Merles, and my friend Andrew Perry, who runs one of the longest running D&D guilds. He's been a DM for like 40 some years, like the same campaign. It's amazing. Anyway, he was my anchor on there. And we all pitched in. We had a storyline developed, kind of informed or influenced by some of my dad's classic work. It's called Ragnarok, so that might give you an idea of what the influence was. And you started, we came up with four-hour sessions where you would play OD&D. And so we welcome people into before GaryCon. We did it for Founders and Legends. So it's the Founders and Legends tournament. And we're running it again at GaryCon, the second round, because it was so popular. But we brought you in the night before. You picked a character, and that was your OD&D character. And you formed teams of eight. That's it. Like, you didn't know each other coming in. Boom, you're in teams of eight. First 4 hours OD&D. At the end of your OD&D session, here's how your character has morphed or evolved into first edition. 22 AD&D. Nice. So there's a lunch break, right? And then you came back and played that night. Then that evening, you got your third edition character. You went into the third edition game. Somewhere in that third edition adventure, something happened and you evolved into a fourth edition character, which is weird, but that's how we made that happen. So it's 3 and 4. And then we went, because, oh, that was a tough one. Thank you, Keith Baker, because he knows 4E and loves it. Thank you, Keith, because I certainly don't. And then 5th edition. then we went into 5th edition, and we also had like a cool like car chase kind of thing, but in space with magic vehicles. So that was fun. And it was a tournament, and there was 5 teams that went through it, and they absolutely loved it. They were like saying, "This is the best experience I've ever had in decades of playing." And these are serious, serious nerds, right? Who played a lot of D&D. God, I think everybody, I think there was one guy out of the 37 or 38 who responded to the thing said, it was okay. But he still signed up for the second round. So, and it's not cheap. It's like $2,000 a seat to play with those, to play in that game, right? But he says, it was okay, but he came back. So I was like, okay, maybe this is one of these people who's like, everything's just kind of okay. So other than that, it was like off the charts. And man, everybody had fun. Now I can tell you, there was a lot of trepidation because each one of these people that I mentioned, they all ran a group through all editions of D&D. So they DM'd, like Zeb DM'd OD&D to all the way through 5e. The way we did that, though, is we boiled it down into, like, pretty, you know, storyline stuff, and then there was mechanic stuff, right? And we had an assistant DM who helped with the mechanic stuff so they could focus on the story part. It kicked ass. This was fantastic. So, yeah, Founders and Legends Tournament. It's an amazing idea. We have the second Descent is our second piece that'll be coming up at GaryCon, and then we're either going to run it at some other conventions if people are interested, or I might just kickstart, like write it up as a consumable, you know, as a module series and kickstart it, just because I got to share this with people. This is something that no one had ever done. These are amazing designers, and they outdid themselves with fun stories. Really crazy, memorable NPCs, and so anyway, for the 50th, that was probably the coolest thing that I did.
That sounds great. As a viewer pointed out, is it slightly ironic that Zeb Cook ran every edition of D&D except the one that he's the author of?
No, he ran, it was 1E2E. So we ran it, it's AD&D, oh, okay, is okay. Kind of clumped into 1E2E. Yeah, sure. So that's why I brought it. I was like, okay, You can do this section, Zeb. You have chops. You know, you should write this section. I think actually Kelsey wrote the 5e part, and might have been Keith wrote the 3e 4e part. Mike Merles did the kind of space race cool stuff, and Andrew Perry and I worked on the OD&D part. So, and OD&D, man, that's nice. Got some powerful spells in it. When you read them, you're like, wow, okay, I see why it's different in AD&D. Like, that's pretty open-ended.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. Here's your permanent charm person. You're welcome.
Yeah.
Your first level. Yeah, spell, so right?
There's some crazy stuff in there. So just seeing how it evolved was cool, but then a great storyline. And man, players, what's funny is we spent 1,500 or 2,000 hours, you know, as a group collectively working on this thing. And when we ran it, all the developers were playtesting it, right? We were terrible. We thought everyone's going to die. Like, this is way too tough. The players were so much better than we were. They were so much better than we were.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, they thought of stuff.
Yes.
We've had the same
experience. Yeah. You were one of the players on our the Big Bad tournament show. Same experience, right? And then you guys did great. I mean, you with Stefan did fantastic. And then the web DM people came in and just carved through it like hot butter. and they were like, they were done in, I don't know, like 40 minutes. And they were like, that's it? That wasn't very challenging. We're like, we didn't expect you guys to be so good.
Yep, that does happen. There was some teams, everything lined up and they got it right, and good die rolls, right? That helps.
Yep.
And they were through there pretty quickly. And others, you know, by the skin of their teeth. But everybody had a good time. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, and certainly this is a skewed audience who signed up to play. I think that most of them were old school D&D players and preferred to play old school style games. So some were 5e players, some were, you know, but it was mostly 5e and AD&D that were kind of the bigger clumps of people. Okay. A little bit in the Pathfinder third. But I think people kind of gravitate towards one or the other more so. And I know people who are commenting, I'm sure somebody loves, you know, Rollmaster from 1983, and that's the name they continue to play, or Tunnels and Trolls or something. And yeah. And there's some great systems out there, but by and large, I think people go to those. And yeah, I'm being a little silly, but there's also some really other fun games. I talked to the Chaosium guys and played some RuneQuest and Pendragon. That's a lot of fun. And I was in the gym the other day, and I was wearing the old Death Saves Orcus shirt, right? Which is great. What a fantastic shirt. I don't know if you've seen, but really nice. I wish Joe was still making those. Yep. But some young college age, you know, guy came up to me and was like, he's like, are you seriously wearing like an Orcus shirt in the gym? I was like, yeah, yeah. That's right. He's like, that's like some black death metal shit, man. That's awesome. That's I was like, yeah. I'm like, oh. I said, I'm a D&D nerd, so that's so he's like, oh, really? You like D&D? You should try this game, Fantasy Warhammer RPG. It's really cool. And he kind of gave me like a 5-minute spiel about Warhammer Fantasy. So now I have to play. I've never played it. I've got to play it because he was so enthusiastic and excited about it that he just wanted to share that with me. So there's other great games out there. I don't mean to disparage any game. Whatever game you're playing, your group likes is awesome.
That's great. So, Luke, as we get toward the end here, whenever you come on, I have like a couple of D&D rules questions that I want to shoot at you to get your input or your experience. So here, I'm just looking at my list. We're not going to get to all of them. I'm looking at my list. But I believe, it's a great segue, because I think you just dropped on us the fact that you lift a bit. Am I right?
Yes. Yeah, I like to go to the gym.
Great. So a couple weeks ago, so back in the summer, we had some good friends that asked me and Paul, they've themselves gotten into weightlifting kind of recently, and they asked us, Dan and Paul, in original D&D, in first edition original D&D, how do you measure a person's strength score? And so my question to you, Luke, is currently, what is your personal strength in original D&D at this time?
So I think my dad said it was what you can standing overhead press over your shoulders, like, you know, military press over your shoulders. I'm not that strong. I'm probably a 15. Like 150 pounds. Like one time I could get 150 pounds. That's it. And there's guys who press like 405. So I'm not that strong.
Yeah, but that's like world champion. That's like world champion weightlifting, I believe, to my knowledge. That's not like I'm not going to ever meet one of those.
They're freaks of nature. They're like 1 in 10 million or 1 in 100 million or something. Yeah, those guys are crazy.
Some kind of specialty class. That's like a specialty class just in weightlifting, is what that is. So someone's gonna clip out that I'm not that strong. It's only 15. That's very strong. That's extremely strong, Luke. What are you talking about?
Yeah, okay. Well, I just go to the gym and I see some of these guys repping out like 225, you know, now seated shoulder press, like 225. I'm like, man, dude, how do you do that? My shoulders aren't that strong. But yeah, no, it's great. So yeah, if you want to go to the gym and test yourself, work into it slowly, please. Don't hurt yourself, right? Do what's comfortable for you and start slow and kind of build up to it. But then, yeah, you can kind of test yourself. And I think it'd be a fun way, you know, and I've had some speed bumps in doing this, but the Body by Gygax stuff, I'm really looking for a way, an app that will do something fun that kind of make it so you can do some of this stuff with your friends and have a fun way to engage in fitness, your fitness goals across a wide spectrum of stuff, not just weightlifting, but it could be walking, running, calisthenics, you know, meditation and certain other things that I think would be a lot of fun. Yeah, and why?
That's exactly the context they were asking the question, right? Of like, they just got into weightlifting and they're like, I want to measure my D&D strength score and see if it goes up as I do this.
And you know, I love that. I love that gamers are doing that because it's sedentary, right? And a lot of us work jobs where we're behind a desk. And man, I tell you what, you know, my good friend Jim Ward passed away recently, and he had, you know, also he was talked about his diabetes and many health problems and stuff. A lot of that was from maybe diet that wasn't balanced and a lack of activity. And I see our community is susceptible to that. And so I would really like to encourage people just for their own health and longevity and quality of life to embrace whatever that activity is that you like doing that gets you moving and can help you with, you know, some of those blood sugar levels and cholesterol and things like that. So we can all be shaking dice for many, many years to come. And so that's kind of my goal of encouraging people to
I'm going to apologize for taking us on a little bit of a tangent here right at the end of the show, but we've had this discussion in the past about how interesting it is that like there's certain skills at the table where we want to drift away from the rules, right? Where things like when you're talking about like social interaction or whatnot, you know, we get upset about like, oh, I don't want to roll dice. I want just talk to me, pretend to be this person and talk to me. Right. Yeah. And then I thought, well, isn't it interesting that we don't do that for like physical tasks? Right. How come if you want to lift the gate, why don't I just like get out the dumbbells and say, well, if you could do it, do it. Right. And so now I'm wondering, like, can we have a whole D&D game where we do the game down at the gym? There's no dice. Somebody's getting hurt, yeah. I think, if we do this. I think it's supposed to
be. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? You might get those really stubborn gamers who like to win and succeed. They may become monsters. They may be like the Hulk, Hulk out, so they could overcome all these things. I do one thing I do have on. I make a few like T-shirts and stuff on both at my GaryCon, you know, store, which we kind of revamped, and so that's rebuilding, and then Gaxworks. But I put up a Bend Bars Lift Gates shirt. On the Gax workshop, and so I wear that to the gym sometimes, and no one has ever said anything to me about it, other than I post a picture of it, and then of course all the old school gamers are like, "Oh, that rocks, dude! That's right. Awesome!" But everyone in the gym is probably like, "What's wrong with this guy? What is this? What does that even mean, dude?" I don't know.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah. That's great. I don't wear a lot of logo T-shirts nowadays, but I would wear that. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, that was. I think that's the only rules question I'm going to get in today. I think. Okay. All right. But I agree. I personally agree. I think it's a good idea to use statistics in the game that reflect reality. Some people may differ. Occasionally, Paul, but I hang on to very. I really want to be able to simulate and relate my fictional world to my real world. So I am with you, Luke, on that. I agree.
Yeah, it's when you get to the wisdom stat that I get a little worried about. I was a slow learner, made a lot of mistakes that may not be so great. My wisdom may be a little lower. My dexterity is probably not that great. Yeah, so. It may be too real if we stat this out too realistically. You may be like, oh, man, I need to do some basic drills or something, you know, get out there and do them again. But, yeah, that's always fun. I remember we did this as years and years ago with my dad in the 80s, early 80s, somewhere where we, you know, wrote down, you know, what we thought we could would be some of our stats and then went into a world or whatever. And we did it again. We played ourselves in an unhallowed game, which was, if you remember Dangerous Journeys, there was various genres, Mythos being the fantasy one. Well, Unhallowed was the first one he really playtested. And that was a horror, modern-day horror RPG. And it was fun. And a lot of it was, well, what would you do? What resources do you actually have? As a broke college student, I didn't have a whole lot of resources at the time. So it was tough. We were dealing with some, like, what I thought were vampires, but they might have been, like, aliens who just had different nutritional needs or something, but it was weird. It was good times, and what a fun game system that was. That would be great to have in today's world with all the apps and things like that that help with character creation. I'm really down an esoteric rabbit hole here. Dangerous Journeys was a great, great complex game. People criticized my dad that AD&D was too simple and not realistic, so he said fine. So he created this rule system where you had physical, mental, and spiritual main stats with your capacity, power, and speed under each one of those neural. So there was like six different categories with three stats that kind of mapped that out. It was skill-based, and if you had skill in athletics, like 10% would go to your wrestling or your boxing, and if you knew this kind of, if you had this language, you might get a 7% bonus here. So it was all very complex and mapped out, and you would by hand have to do that, right? So it would take like 6 hours to make a character. Now an app would be like, here you go. 15 seconds later, here's your character. Yeah. So it would be really neat. And it was a lot of fun.
This is a good point. For what it's worth, I had Mythos, and I remember looking at the introductory cut down character creation rules and going, oh, this will take a while. This will take a while. Maybe I'll focus on my math degree instead.
I'm not going to say which was the best decision, but yeah. You had steep points, skill, training, experience. I don't remember. And practice, I think. Yeah. So
points for the magic.
Pico was magic. Joss was your luck.
We're just about out of time, Luke. So I just wanted to ask real quick if there's anything else about Wrath of the Sea Lich that you want to get out there for our viewers.
It's awesome. It's an awesome adventure. It's a great way to introduce you to the world of Okrim in a fast, fun adventure with lots of with a mix of combat, puzzles, some intrigue going on, in a high stakes, fast paced adventure. There'll be lots of fun, of course. Other than that, I mean, go and read up about it. I don't want to bore people too much. There's a great little site that kind of gives you some of the synopsis and some snips of the pictures in there. It's old school style, from as you can tell from the art that we get. It's all black and white. Some really, really great art in there. Fun and fast paced, filled with action. And I look forward to writing some more Shadow Dark adventures. So if you want to see more old school adventures from me, please back this one. So it encourages me to continue to do it, because I do have a family to feed and three daughters who probably want to go to college and get married and all that sort of stuff. Unfortunately, that takes gold pieces, so I have to get out there and do my thing. If you want to come to my panels or get in a game or something, or just chat with me, I'll be at GameholeCon in Madison, Wisconsin. I think that starts on the 17th of October. So it's my good buddy Alex Cameron and his crew there. And then I'll be jumping on a plane with my, I'll be solo there, but my family's joining me for Lucca in Italy. So if you're in Europe or want to fly over there, it's supposed to be a great time. It'll be my first experience. So I'll be there for a little while. There's also going to be a really beautiful D&D art display that John Peterson, noted D&D historian, is putting together. That'll be in a cathedral in Lucca as well. So that should be a lot of fun. So yeah, come join me either one of those places. Or in 2025, the first convention I've booked is Genghis Khan, and that's in around Denver, Colorado area. It's some suburb of Denver, Colorado, but Genghis Khan, just like you know, Genghis Khan, but with C-O-N at the end. And after that, of course, GaryCon. GaryCon will be March 20th to 23rd. We'll have a whole host of people. And if you wanted to get in on that Founders and Legend tournament, I think I have four or five seats left. So you can get a ticket to the Founders and Legends tournament and join us as one of those folks. I think 32 or 33 out of the 40 signed up for round two. A few people fell out, mostly due to personal reasons. You know, life can be harsh sometimes, right? So not everybody can make it back, but pretty happy that 33 out of 40 are coming back for more.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Nice. I'm putting the link to the Kickstarter here in the chat. It's also available in the description of the video here on YouTube if you're watching us on YouTube. So please check it out. It looks like there's 17 days left as of the moment that we are here talking about this now. And as Dan pointed out at the top, well past its initial goal, of course. Help Luke unlock some of those last goals and get an awesome product while you're at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for doing that. If you've watched Kickstarters, you get this nice rocket start, and then you kind of go into this trough for like what feels like forever, and then a little spike at the end when people decide, oh yeah, I've been following this, I really do want it. So please, you know, jump in there for whatever the pledge is, and share it with your friends. Tell a friend.
Awesome. Dan, any final thoughts for us before we wrap things up?
I think probably Luke should have the last word. I'll say that as we wrap up, if our viewers want more of this, they can go look at our earlier episode this season when we had John Peterson on talking about curating that D&D art exhibit in Lucca, Italy, as a matter of fact, among other things. So you can go look for that. And I'll tease next week's episode. We momentarily talked about Matt Finch's Swords and Wizardry. And I was kind of waiting. I was hoping that Luke would badmouth Matt so that when we have him on next week, I could try to stir up some drama, but that didn't happen. He only said nice things. So we will be having Matt Finch on to talk about his current project next week, and I hope our viewers will check in for that.
Yeah, definitely. Matt Finch is a great guy. Got a good team there at Mythmere, so nothing bad to say about them. I could plug my Patreon. I also have a Patreon. You guys talked about your Patreon, yeah. So I have a Patreon. Patreon.com/GaxWorks, GaxWorx. And you can sign up for free, as we all have it. If you pay like $5 a month, I think that's a silver level or something like that, we put out a magazine called G20, a digital magazine, that has an adventure in Okrim and Okrim information in it every single month. It's a fantastic deal. So G20 magazine monthly at the $5 rate, unless I'm mistaken, but I think it was $5. Yeah, and it's got at least a 2-hour Okrim adventure every month that I put in there. So tons and tons of good stuff.
Fantastic. Definitely check that out, viewers. And that link to Luke's Patreon is now in our chat as well. So please.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, and you guys are great, and I'll have to come back on in the future for sure. Maybe next year when I'm promoting the setting book or something.
Awesome. We would love that. Absolutely love it. Dan,
so Paul,
Dan,
I think that wraps it up. Is that right? Yes.
Yeah, that pretty much wraps this up.
It does say 11 on my clock. It's been 1 hour. I know you guys are very punctual.
Yep. Viewers, So check out those links in the description to Luke's work. Dan, do you have anything you've already talked about next week's show? That's what's tripping me up. Viewers, sorry. If you so prefer
very,
to listen
next
to this
week
show,
when they'll have Matt Finch from Mythmere.
Viewers, if you prefer to listen to our show in audio-only podcast format, you can do so. Those podcasts are available on our website at wanderingdms.com, also through various podcast carriers like iTunes and Spotify and Stitcher and Pocket Cast. If you're listening to the show right now on one of those sites and it offers the ability to do so, please rate and review our show. That helps other users of that site find us, and we really appreciate it.
We really do. And of course, thanks to our patrons who do support the show here. If you'd like to join them, please visit our Patreon, patreon.com/wanderingdms. And just like Paul said at the top of the show, every tier gets you access to our Discord server, our private Discord server, where the conversations continue 24/7. And we just have the smartest, wisest, highest intelligent patrons in all the land. And if you have any questions about old school D&D or 5th edition or science fiction or horror games, where you can always get some great feedback on what to do in your game there from our patrons. Don't forget that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us. We're on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, GitHub, places like that, with the handle Wandering DMs on all those sites. So please look for this there and resurrect that like button.
I want to know how you're assessing their intelligence so you can make those claims. That's what I want to know. Where's the scale?
Oh, there's
what's
a
the
formula.
We're using there's, we know that you got to press.
Oh, there's a
press.
Formula. I have spreadsheets. So big thanks to Luke for joining us here again. Please back his Kickstarter currently for the wonderful old school adventure Wrath of the Sea Lich. It's on Kickstarter right now. Luke will adore having you on next time that we get an opportunity. So thanks so much. And viewers, don't forget, we are live here every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So please join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.